Hello, this is the Arcturian Ascension Process Show, and for our guest today, we have Ronald Cole, who is a par excellent astronomer, astrologer, and astronomer, too. He is going to talk to us today about the year 2011 and what we have in store for us. So, Ronald, can you tell us a little bit, first off, like, what is the best way to get a hold of you?
Well, I live in the greater Orlando, Florida area, and the best way to get a hold of me is by emailing me. My email address is livingastro, that's LIVINGASTRO, livingastro@aol.com.
And I suggest that all of you do. He gives amazing readings and sends you back a little, tells you anything that's going to be going on. He just, his knowledge is unfathomable. So, Ronald, could you begin by just telling us, however it is that you start, about what we have in store for us, astrologically speaking, what the energies, can you explain a little bit about how astrology works, you know, how the energies interact with us for those of the listeners that don't know anything about astrology?
Well, I first started with a strong interest in astronomy. You were right. When I was growing up, I had big things on the wall showing all of the planets in our solar system and how many moons they had and the distance from the sun and their consistency. And I loved looking at the heavens with telescopes. And I began to sense, I went kind of beyond just the regular data of astronomy by looking at the whole heavens and patterns and planets and thinking there is some energy behind all of this, more than just observational energy in seeing these bodies moving around the sun. And that's what led me into the next point of astrology. Now, in today's world, we always think of astronomy as the science, and astrology is more or less the belief system, but actually astrology is the mother of astronomy. It was the original energy from which astronomy was the offshoot so that it could observe the movements of the planets. Well, once I opened the door to understand the astrological understandings and how these planetary patterns affect human beings, and life cycles and timings of events in the life, well, that was the revolutionary step that I took, and that was about 40-some years ago. In fact, 40 years this year, 1971. And ever since then, I've been doing astrology chart readings. And I always make it a point to look at the cycles of each year when we are early in the year and note what major things are going on. And this year, 2011, Sue, has some fascinating planetary movements and changes this year. The outer planets, meaning the ones from Jupiter and Saturn, Uranus, Neptune through Pluto, are the ones that are much more important in indicating collective unconscious and outward manifesting energies, more than the ones like Mercury and Venus and Mars. Those are more personal planets. So pretty much I've been looking at the outer planets, you see.
Right.
And a whole bunch of them are changing signs this year. Kind of interesting. Uranus, which has been in Pisces for about the last 7 years, other than a very, very brief sojourn into Aries, which occurred, probably in the spring period of 2010, but it only touched the very beginning and backed out of it, 0 degrees. It didn't go much further than that. This is going to be moving now permanently into Aries, and it's going to be making that shift on March 11th, 2011, 3-11-11. And this time it's staying there for 7 years. And I think that's going to awaken a lot of the mass consciousness out of the stupor they've been in for the last 7 years, because it's been previously going through the sign of Pisces. And that is not a bad sign, but it is kind of a vague, misty, foggy, stupor-producing sign. And I kind of think of Uranus as the planet that has a lot to deal with the consciousness of the masses. because it is associated in the astrology chart wheel with the 11th house, because its sign of Aquarius is the 11th sign of the zodiac. And the 11th house is humanity in general, our fellow human beings, our humanistic instinct to help others, as well as the humanistic instinct for creating inventions and bringing new things into the world so that the masses can have improvements in their life in general. And it's also our personal friends and acquaintances. So it's other people. And that planet is moving into a sign that I believe is a lot better for it in energy than it's been in the last 7 years in Pisces. It's going into a fire sign, Aries. Now, it touched that sign earlier in 2010, so I know the real astrological pundits in the world will say it's already been there, but it only was in that sign for a matter of weeks. It got to the very beginning of Aries and then went right back into Pisces. So it was only a very short touch in 2010. In fact, one of my friends, Sue, writes for a very major important astrological publication. And she said she did an article on Uranus moving into Aries. And she does articles every week. And she said that was the number one interest-generated article she's ever written. So people out there are very fascinated about this planet moving into this sign, because it is, after all, Sue, the planet that rules the sign of Aquarius, the sign of the new age.
Age of Aquarius.
That's right. This is Uranus's Aquarius's ruler. And so it's going to be a much more alive, action-orientated, wakening up, taking direct consciousness and awareness type of energy when it's in Aries. And it has more of a revolutionary energy itself anyway. Uranus rules electricity, and it rules frequency energies and frequency vibrations and cycles. And so with all of that in mind, it's in a much more dynamic kick-start sign with Aries. And that's going to be there for 7 years. So that's one of the big changes. Now, here is a really big one. April 4th, almost a month after Uranus changes signs, April 4th, 2011, Neptune enters Pisces. Now, this is so important because the last time it left Pisces was about the 1850s.
Wow.
Somewhere between the 1840s and 1850s, it was going through Pisces.
Mm-hmm.
Well, get this. This is amazing. Major change, because this planet is going into the sign that it naturally rules. And Pisces is going to, I believe it'll, well, of course, first of all, it's going to be there for 14 years. And I believe that the placement of Neptune in Pisces is going to be the finalization of all of the Piscean karma that we are supposed to be working off and balancing
out.
That's a relief. We haven't done yet, that we've got 14 final more years to do this before it itself will go into Aries. You see what I mean by that?
Yes.
The karma of the last 2,100 years of human history, that's been the age of Pisces. And since Neptune goes through Pisces 14 years out of every 168 years, it's not that uncommon that it's been in Pisces a number of times within the last 2,000 years, but this trip is interesting because it's occurring now that the Aquarian age has started, and it's occurring with Uranus going into Aries, and it's occurring with shifts in consciousness, but any holdovers that we still have, unresolved energies from the last 2,100 years in human events or consciousness, or any resolved, unresolved patterns that we're still carrying around that are of the Piscean age that have not been integrated, balanced out, worked through, or come to some kind of equilibrium with, is going to be another 14-year period in which we will do this. And after that, there is no chance anymore. That's what I see.
So what does that mean, there is no chance anymore?
Well, because now we'll be fully, completely, 100% settled, centered into Aquarius. Now, when I say there's no chance anymore, I'm talking on a higher celestial planetary transiting level, we still have free will and we still have personal energy choices that we can have holdovers from the age of Pisces that we still can deal with. But on a mass group humanity way, there isn't chances anymore. It now has to go down to individual detailed events.
Well, would you say that maybe, you know, since there's so many illusions that go with Pisces and that go with Neptune, would you say that maybe within these last next 14 years coming up that we'll, all these illusions, all these lies and illusions that we've been living under, do you think perhaps this will be something that will really help us to, like, see the truth?
That's what I believe is going to be the case. I think it's going to do something Uranus didn't. Uranus kind of kept the masses in a bit of a stupor or in a bit of a wow, and all these other changes in society and things were going on, and there wasn't really quite an awakening. It's just starting in 2010 with it entering Aries, but the Neptune moving into Pisces is going to do exactly what you're saying. It's going to really, truly, truly, in its transit, release the veil of hiddenness, release the fog of unclarity, and make us more understanding and focusing in onto pure directional energy, because Neptune is extremely powerful in the sign of Pisces. It's in its own sign. It rules that sign. So it's going to be, so to speak, dignified. When I first started astrology, Sue, we used the term essentially dignified when a planet was in its own sign, which sounds so proper, doesn't it? Well, we kind of say more dignified today. We say it's in its dignity because it's in the sign that it rules. So you've got to understand the more outward opening mental cerebral realization energy is something Uranus would give to the masses of the world, and Neptune, more the subliminal, subconscious, inner nature, karma balancing inwardness from past lives, is more of a Neptunian type of energy. So with all of these changes going on outward, inward, this is why this is a very interesting period to be alive at. And this is why some people are just having ups and downs or challenges. There's a lot of choppy energy going on out there, and it's demanding evolution, and it's demanding change. So Neptune was in Pisces from the 1840s to the 1850s, somewhere in a 14-year space back then. And even at the time of the Civil War, it was already in its next sign of Aries. So we need to see that this is going to be a very interesting and empowering transit. And it's the number one thing that people are looking at in astrology this year, because Neptune changes signs only once every 14 years. You see. So
14 years ago was, what was the date? You're quicker with numbers than I am.
From 2010? Oh, great. Now you put me on the spot.
Yeah, right. Okay, 2011, take away 14.
Oh, 2011, right. Yeah, so we would have been about 1996, 1997 when it first entered the sign of
Boy, that seems like five lives ago, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And it's been in Aquarius ever since. And I was thinking that's an interesting placement for it to be in, because it is the planet of the older age, Pisces, the ruler of Pisces, and it is in the sign of the new age, Aquarius. And it was making that bridge and gap. But a lot of people said, oh, once it leaves Aquarius, then the integration between former age and present age is over. Actually, I think it's going to extend on another level, on a subconscious level, on a karmic level, on a residue level, still for the next 14 years. But it doesn't have to be bad. It's a time of releasing, moving on, erasing, and eliminating, you see.
So. Yes.
Then also in March, because March and April, there's a lot of things going on here, we get a node change. The nodes have been moving with the north node of the moon in Capricorn for a while now. It's going to move into Sagittarius on March 3rd, 2011, and the south node will then be in Gemini. Now, in the case of March again, we have a lot of things happening in March and April. Look at this. March 3rd, the node changes. March 11th, Uranus changes signs. Well, March 28th, is the day that we have an exact Jupiter-Saturn opposition in the sky. Mm-hmm. On that day, March 28, 2011, Jupiter's in Aries opposing Saturn in Libra. And this was something that was kind of a dominant theme of 2010. And every 20 years, we have a Jupiter-Saturn opposition. And we have sometimes a bleed over of that into the following year. So it really was an event of 2010, but it bleeds over into 2011. And once we get into April and certainly into May, this opposition breaks up. However, it reoccurs again from mid-November 2011 till early March 2012, and then we don't see it again for about 19 months. Close to almost 20 years. And Saturn and Jupiter are very, very interesting because one represents the brakes, not like getting an opportunity for a brakes, but like the brakes in a car, Saturn, and Jupiter's like the accelerator.
Yeah.
And one is moving ahead, expanding, growing, thrusting onward, optimistic, hopeful, and the other is cautionary, slowing down, limiting, restricting, in many ways blocking. And this opposition is fascinating because many people who are born with this have very cyclic lives if it's in their birth chart. They'll go through a period of perhaps a number of years of high-level prosperity and great abundance and Midas touch ability. Everything they touch and do seems to turn to gold. They go through a Jupiter cycle. And then it shifts. And they go through a period of a number of years in which they really have to work hard. Things are not coming in as flowingly. It's not negative. It's just much more challenging. It's a little bit of a dry period. And then they get back into abundance again. It's not just like continuously going uphill and getting better and improving. It'll be bursts of great advancement and slow down periods, sometimes of even solitude. Because that opposition means that those two are in a way at war with each other in the sky and in a person's birth chart. So we've got that warrior-like energy going on, so to speak, if I can use the term warrior, between Jupiter and Saturn this year. And it was a part of last year because we had a really tough major grand cardinal cross in 2010, and Jupiter and Saturn were parts of those planets that formed it. But this year, they just make their opposition. They're not quite as heinous as involved as some of the other things, too.
Can you talk a little bit about that Grand Cross? Because I know that was all over the Internet, and I don't know
everywhere
that it was ever very clearly presented. So
people were writing about it, and I personally was curious to see how many sites were out there connecting to this Cardinal Cross, and my goodness, they were everywhere. This occurred in the cardinal signs. Jupiter and Uranus were both at the very beginning of Aries, and Pluto was at the beginning of Capricorn, and Saturn was at the very, very beginning of Libra, and then we had energies from other planets, such as the Moon, at the very beginning of Cancer. And when that all came together, it was like August 7th, as I remember, 2010, there was, let's see, we've got the Moon, number one, we've got Mars, number two, because Mars was in early Libra. We've got Jupiter, number three, in early Aries. We've got Saturn, number four, in early Libra. We had Uranus, number five, in early Aries. And we had Pluto, number six. We had six planets all in affliction to each other, making hard aspects, oppositions and squares to each other. And most of them were outer planets, other than the Moon and Mars. And
right.
What this meant was a pretty heavy period of dealing with the ability to kind of throw off the shell or skin, the old skin, of allowing others to control us because it's in cardinal signs. Cardinal signs are always signs of self-empowerment, strength of the self, strength within, strength of leadership, strength of personal power. And it was in Aries, Cancer, Libra, Capricorn. Those are the cardinal signs. And what that really means is that was kind of a boiling point and a breaking period in which kind of like many people really truly burst through their old skin and began to realize that they've got to do something. They've got to take power back into their own hands. They've got to do something in their own lives to take on initiative energy, that they cannot depend on a spouse to do it for them or parents to do it for them or an institute to do it for them, that they have to take personal responsibility and take on personal action. And that's what happened, is a lot of people really woke up. Now, some of the spin-off effects were in the election of that year, in which there were a lot of people through Tea Party movements and that who rebelled. Not that I'm supporting that. I'm just saying that that was an example of certain ways that this energy was being used.
Mm-hmm.
Other people were using that as having breakthroughs in consciousness. Many times during the year, I was having clients coming to me for their very first reading saying, you know, 2 years ago, I would never have been here for this astrology session. I was afraid of it. I didn't believe in it. My religion prevented me from even directly thinking about having such an example as an astrology chart. But I've just had a sudden change this year, and I'm very interested more in understanding things about myself. And I'm making this bold step by taking the chance to come in for an astrology reading. It's things like that that shows how that aspect worked. Taking more empowerment of self and not letting outside people, et cetera, tell us this is the way to do things, this is your belief system, to find your own belief system and break through the veneer, like that's why I mentioned shedding skin, like the snake who sheds its old skin, shed the old skin and then move into a new way of looking at things. So it's like an illumination kind of aspect, but under tension, not with easy, nice things. Not nice pats on the back. There was a lot of the skin bursting forth from the old skin to the new inner.
Right.
You see.
I think we needed to burst forth because there's been so much resistance. I kind of see an opposition or any kind of a Saturn, Jupiter, especially a difficult one, as like a machine, because you've got expanding, contracting. So I think of like a machine, you know, where
yes.
It kind of, the wheels go out and in and out and in, and it moves
yes.
you forward.
And at least this year, we don't have it all year long. We did last year. I
mm-hmm.
know we have it really reaching a peak here on March 28th, but by
yes.
the time we get to May, from May through mid-November of 2011, we do not have that opposition anymore. It reoccurs only at the ending of the year and at this early part of the year. So most of this year, or at least maybe beyond half of this year, we don't have that opposition. And Jupiter, by the way, is also changing signs. January 22nd, it's entering Aries. But I hope Aries people aren't going to feel cheated. But it zips through that sign with lightning speed and hardly gives them any time of enjoying it being in Aries. Because it enters Aries January 22nd and June 4th, same year, 2011, it enters Taurus, and it never leaves Taurus until June 11th of 2012. So Taurus people get a whole year of it, June 4th of this year through June 11th of next year. It retrogrades, moves back to the beginning of Taurus, but it never re-enters Aries. So Aries people only have a short burst of Jupiter from January 22nd through June 4th. And I've even had some Aries clients say, and friends of mine say they feel cheated by their short journey of Jupiter. It
well,
moves
can you
from
explain
Pisces
a little bit
Taurus.
What Jupiter energy does, how people experience that burst
Jupiter
of Jupiter energy?
Jupiter is the
energy?
Principle of abundance, and it's the principle of no limits on anything. I always say it's like a building without walls. And people say to me, what does that mean? How could there be a building without walls? Well, it's like a building or an energy that exists, but there's no physical wall structure to limit the end of that building. It can go on in all directions with unlimited energy. And that's what Jupiter represents, unlimited possibilities and continuous growth and expansion on all levels. In the Secret, which was very much an importantly viewed DVD and listened to CD a number of years back, the law of abundance, the law of attraction was brought up as the principle behind the manifesting of the secret. And the law of abundance is ruled by Jupiter. The law of attraction, what you focus on, what you set as goals in goal sheets, vision boards, journals, dialoguing to yourself, you actually do have the power to attract it back to you in either the exact form you're focusing on or one very close to it. And Jupiter is the principle of this law of attraction. It's the law of abundance. It's the idea that there's going to be always enough for everyone, and that if we understand that there is this ability to manifest and attract, we don't ever have to feel fearful or alone or kind of like many people feel totally isolated in the world. On another level, Jupiter represents angels and angelic beings, spiritual teachers, spiritual guides, guardian angels, higher evolved souls, higher beings that work with us to give us advice or to aid us or to flow with information to others. Jupiter represents that because it's something bigger, larger, and of another plane of consciousness, of a higher vibration. And anything that's of a bigger, larger concept or a bigger, larger expansion to another level is a Jupiter energy. And so it represents the law of expansion and multiplication and growth and abundance. But it also is not a planet that knows how to apply the brakes. It keeps providing and expanding and giving and giving and giving and giving, and it doesn't apply brakes. Now, I had a friend who just had a Uranus and Jupiter transit, and all of this erratic, sudden manifestation of choppy problems happened in her family, Sue. And then Jupiter came into the picture, and it expanded and got worse, even more temper and more anger. And she said to me, I thought this is such a good planet. And I said, well, it expands anything. It could even expand a small argument and blow it up into a big major one. Its principle is to create the idea of multiplication, something bigger and something larger. And so when you deal with Jupiter, you also have to realize you can get into overdoing things too. It's the principle behind heaviness, excess weight, overeating, overspending, overgambling, overworking. Any of these things are also offshoots of Jupiter. So its idea is to give, 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 flow, flow, flow. And our point is we need a Saturn energy to sometimes discipline that flow or it will get out of control. And it's Saturn that gives us the ability to go on the diet and to take off the weight and to resist the Jupiter's tendency to make us bigger and larger. And Saturn rules weight reduction. Jupiter rules weight gain. It's Saturn's energy to have us control our habits, our bad habits, our gambling habits, our drinking habits, our overworking, overdoing type of habits, because Jupiter's providing the fodder for that, and Saturn is giving us the discipline to say, all right, I've had enough, I've bottomed out, now it's time to start changing. Now it's time to lose the weight, now it's time to stop gambling, now it's the time to stop this and that. And that's what's going to happen to a lot of people this year, because there's a Jupiter-Saturn opposition. Yeah. And they're going to reach a point in which they're going to say, enough is enough with this. Now I'm taking my own power or discipline, and it's not easy. That's always Saturn. It's never easy, but it means that that is the only way that I see I'm going to get this under control, because it's not going to be controlled on its own. See?
And so when is that again? Because I think I kind of lost track of when that was. Maybe the other has too.
Because Saturn represents our own
discipline. I mean, when does the Saturn-Uranus, Saturn-Jupiter opposition happening?
It happens exactly on March 28th, so it means that as we're getting into March, the aspect is in effect and forming, because they have to be within an 8-degree distance from each other, orb as we call it, to have an effect. So that's in effect most of March. It peaks in exact on March 28th, and it'll stay in effect for about another 5 weeks till about May 1st. And then in May and June and July and August and September and October and the first half of November, we do not really have a Jupiter-Saturn opposition. They're too far apart. Then they will reoccur again to form another within-orb opposition from mid-November 2011 to early March 2012. So basically, when it's in opposition, that's the time we have more celestial energy to push us in the direction of taking responsibilities to overcome something that has either gotten out of control in our lives or we've reached enough is enough. I need to break this and I need to move on, you see.
Yes. So, also, I can kind of see Saturn. Being a Capricorn, I view Saturn very much as like a grounding force, you know, clipping away what you don't need and really going inside and grounding it. And so if you look at Jupiter as, you know, like you said, as the guidance, the inner guidance and all those great things, it gives us a opportunity to really ground those energies.
Absolutely. That's why it's an Earth planet. In fact, even in ancient times, Saturn, who was not one of the gods and goddesses of ancient mythology, he existed as one of the giant beings that was in manifestation before the gods and goddesses came about. He was a titan, one of the large giant beings. And in even looking back into very, 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 very early times, Saturn was kind of a titan associated with agriculture and farming and tilling of the land and the soil. Mm. And that's why he was often seen with a sickle to, you know, cut the wheat.
Yes, I see. Mm-hmm.
And then with his symbol became, during this time of Capricorn, we have New Year's. And on New Year's Eve, we always have the symbol of the old year as the old, old man with the long beard carrying a sickle, Father Time. Well, that's like Saturn. Father Time is manifesting Saturn. Saturn also represents the passing of time, aging, maturing. It rules clocks and calendars and any time recording devices. It meaning Saturn. Saturn also represents one getting older and wiser. It represents old age. In fact, many cultures around the world refer to Saturn as the bringer of old age. But it also makes you more down to earth, literally. When I'm saying that, I literally mean with the soil, the land, property, all of that. And it grounds you. Saturn's nature is to ground you.
Great.
So it could ground you and manifest strength within you by the grounding so you have the power to overcome something that's been uncontrollable until you were grounded. See?
Yeah, when you were talking about the Saturn-Jupiter opposition, about, you know, you move forward and stop and move forward and stop, I wanted to make a quick analogy to our spiritual awakening, is that we get that Jupiter energy and we bring in this amazing light, but then we have to ground the light. That's when Saturn comes in. That's where you have to take responsibility and you have to let go of the old and you have to, like, cut off, you know, all that is dead and dying and release and change. And so that process of awakening is very much, you know, you get this burst of feeling like you're going ahead. It's like, oh, now I have to go in and pare down and let go of a whole bunch of stuff that just doesn't serve me anymore and ground that energy. So be a good year for awakening with all this energy going on.
And that's why I said earlier, this is a very interesting year to be alive in the world and with these changes, because these are outer planets that are doing this. And the outer planets deal, again, with the mass consciousness, the super consciousness of the world. So it's a these are powerful things. And we also have, and if you look in the ephemeris, if anyone knows what ephemeris is, it's a list of planetary placements. You'll see that almost the entire year of 2011, there's a Uranus-Pluto square going on. They will almost always be very, very tight in a square, close to each other. 90 degrees apart, Uranus in very early Aries, Pluto in very early Capricorn. So there's a Uranus-Pluto square. And I have watched afflictions between Uranus and Pluto and found them to be very interesting. For example, now this is not a square, but it's an opposition. During the middle part of the 1960s, oh, about 1964 till maybe early 1967, Saturn was going through Pisces and Uranus was in Virgo. and they were afflicting each other. They were sitting opposite each other. While it's in opposition, not a square, it was one of the manifesting times for great change in society. We had a lot of social unrest. We had the beginning of demonstrations and campuses, but we also had the awakening of a lot of people's consciousness. And we had a lot of people beginning to say, well, what's your sign? And they began to become aware of astrology. You didn't see that in the early 60s, but you did from the middle and late 60s on. And the changes that created flower children, hippie movements, counterculture, breakthrough understandings, doing new things opposed to the old traditional ways, that's a Uranus-Pluto confrontationary, transformationary energy shift when they're in affliction to each other. And here's why. Uranus, as I said, has a lot to deal with the masses of the world because it's associated with the 11th house of the astrology chart, the house of humanity, the house of fellow human beings. And Pluto has a lot to deal with killing off the old ways, the old attitudes, even the old types of ways of speaking and words you use and bringing in new slang and new words. It's the planet that makes something no longer manifesting, makes it old hat, makes it not exist anymore. And when you put them together, Uranus, which is very connected with change, and Pluto, which is connected with killing off that which is now outmoded, there's times of great societal breakthroughs and openings and change. Now, in the 1960s, they created a tremendously good change because it opened up a lot of people's minds. It created social unrest. It created a lot of this and that, I know. And a lot of people weren't favorable for the 60s. But when you look at the whole picture versus what especially young people were like in the early 60s and 50s versus the middle to late 60s and early 70s, there was a big difference. And this Uranus-Pluto affliction created, I believe, the harbinger for change during that period. Now, since Uranus rules the new age and Pluto rules that which is hidden, it tends to illuminate and lighten and bring more light to that which is hidden, and there's an affliction between Uranus and Pluto. Well, see, that's why people in the 60s started to go back to ancient sciences. They began to rediscover astrology. They began to rediscover an older pursuits, even numerology, understanding things from philosophies that never really were old. They just were kind of buried away and not consciously directed and used by people. And it broke through new directions in art. It broke through new directions in ways things are being presented. And it's very experimental. So this is actually a very good thing. Because
and
it
also
It just kills off that which we no longer need, and it makes society change and evolve.
Yes.
See.
So. And also the people that were initiating back then, the early hippies type, you know, they're all in their Saturn. We're all in our Saturn years now.
That's right. Exactly.
So we
Saturn
get to
years.
Have a redo of this.
And this time it's a square, not an opposition. And the square
isn't quite as much fun.
You're
just going to do that. Explain the difference between the two.
An opposition is kind of like you versus them. I'm on one end of the seesaw, teeter-totter, you're on the other. Or I'm on one end, they are on the other, meaning the establishment or whatever you want to say. And it's us versus them. And here we are and we're breaking away from you. But yet, I'm an offshoot of you and I have, in a certain strange way, counterbalancing you by my very existence, like on the opposite ends of seesaws, because that's what an opposition represents, two opposite forces facing off of each other. A square isn't quite as much fun. It's more internal. A square means breaking through. Yes, it's going to create changes in society and masses. That's true. All of that will happen because that's an energy of that aspect. But it means it isn't just we're going to do this and then we're going to do something different in 5 years and 10 years. We're really going to make pertinent changes this time. They're inward now. It's not just outward. It's both outward and inward. And a lot of this change with the square is going to be permanently from inside the human psyche and the subconscious and the understanding of the masses of the world. And I think a lot of stuff about how we've been controlled, how the media can control us, how they can do media hypes on certain things. This kind of stuff is becoming much more now resistant by the masses, and or should I say much more understood by the masses and much less successfully received by them, for examples from squares like the Uranus-Pluto of this year. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Or did I lose you?
I really, because there was an oppositional nature back in the 60s of them and me,
yes,
type thing. But now it is an inner thing that each of us has to go inside of ourselves to make that discernment.
But with it, we can still have the same amount of breakthroughs that the masses in society had, and the greatest change, look at those changes again, from the beginning of the 60s when this affliction did not exist to the ending of the 60s in which it had completed the affliction. Look how the world had changed. Well, it did, and we have a chance to change even further now and grow even better. So this is an aspect that in the long run is good. But this
great
time we have to clear our own inner cobwebs out too, not just the outer.
Uh-huh.
So that's why a square is harder, because the square says this is something about you. And I don't mean on a pedestal or ego you. This is something you have to deal with. This is something inside. This is something inward. Where an opposition is you versus your boss, you versus the traffic, you versus the world in general. That's how that one works. But a square is internal. And I always say to my students, oppositions have at least a give and take to them. It's like two parties playing a tug of war with a rope. One group is pulling it one way, the other is pulling it the other way. That's how an opposition works. But a square, you're the only person. You yourself are there alone, and you're dealing with this challenging energy. And while it will affect the masses in general, because Uranus is the planet affecting the masses, it's going to be internal openings and changes within people that will have a spin-off effect in the outer way. Gosh, I hope I'm not getting too deep with all of this, but I try to get into astrology.
No, I think that's very pertinent. I think that's really important. And I think that we are really going into some personal changes that can only lead to planetary changes, because one of the things we all know, you know, about ecology and seeking the truth and being responsible for the reality in which we live, and which we create, we have to go inside first.
Yes.
Yeah, because our creations all begin deep inside ourselves. And we have to, inside of ourselves, come to terms with that energy of change that you're speaking of.
Yes, and don't forget, we are under influences on various levels. We are under the influence of planets affecting our personal chart. We are under the influence of planets affecting the chart of the city that we live in, of the state that we live in, which also has a different chart than the city, and we have the whole country's chart under influence. And as a mass for America, for every American, this is an interesting period, because the United States is having its eighth Saturn return since 1776, and this is number eight. It actually already happened once. On December the 3rd, 2010, Saturn was exactly at the point in the sky that day that it was on July 4th, 1776. But the two other times it's going to make its return are this year, 2011, the day after the spring equinox, on March 22nd. Saturn will be retrograding and back right on the same point it was at the time of the Declaration of Independence. And then it will eventually stop and move forward again after backing up in that retrograde period. And on August 28th, 2011, it's going to be hitting the Saturn in the U.S. chart for the third and final time, and it won't be there for another 29 years again. So
what would happen when a country, especially the United States, who has really had a rough go lately, comes into a Saturn return? What would that happen, like, you know, daily?
It does several things. In the past, in the last seven times, it seemed to create a lot of inner and challenges within the country itself, especially with political leaders and government. But this time, it's I believe, because it's number 8, and 8 is the vibration that Saturn connects with very much. And I'm not a numerologist, but I understand that 8 is kind of the number of Saturn. What this means to me is this can be, and I hope I'm wrong, because this is one thing I want to be wrong on, the diminishing of the power of the United States as being the prime world leader. I think this one is going to shift balance of powers into the hands of other parts of the world. Now, we are not going to lose and fall way to the bottom, but I believe that there is the realization within the next 29 years after this return that maybe the true peak of empowerment for the United States has already come and gone, and we may still be very, very powerful, but not at the point that we once were or evolved to.
Uh-huh.
And that's going to be pretty shocking for a lot of people to accept or think about. And again, I hope I'm wrong. In the past, the last time this happened, we had the Reagan assassination attempt, and we had other issues. He was, you know, believe it or not, at one time a very unpopular president. And we also had it in the 1950s during the time of communism and fear and the witch hunts of the 1950s. And when you go back and back, we had it during the time of the Depression, the Great Depression. We had it during the Civil War. During Lincoln's presidency, there was a Saturn return, and during the time of the Civil War. So this hasn't been a sweet, wonderful, pleasant little experience for the United States.
No, it doesn't sound like it has been at all.
And I also went back to times that are so far back that we don't think what was going on with the country back in the 1800s before the Civil War, or even right at the very first return, 29 and a half years after the Declaration of Independence was signed. We had all kinds of things always happening. So it's quite interesting. This time, with the other astrological changes of planets, I think it's affecting us in the way I've just said. I think it's going to affect us in a diminishing of power.
Uh-huh.
World power, administrative power, leadership power, you know, that type of thing.
Right.
So,
exactly.
Do you have any observations that you want to say on that too? Or think about?
Well, a Saturn return is that we have to really, personally, when we have a Saturn return, we have to really look at what we've done so far and how did we get where we are. And if we really look at where we've been so far and what we have done and we really take the lessons,
yes,
we move through that karma and fill it with light and heal that karma, we become greatly empowered. And in fact, when I had my first Saturn return, and just before that, I was deeply, deeply depressed, which is a common thing, I think. And when I had my first Saturn return, that was when I started my spiritual life, and I started astrology, and I started yoga, and I got my first teacher, and I planned to go back to graduate school, so it was a huge change. So I think not being number one might be really good for us because we need to move out of having any place be number one because this has to be a world that is all united and we're all equal and we're all the same. And we have to not think of nations and individuals. We have to think of the unity consciousness that we are Gaia if we are going to save her.
That's a very beautiful way of saying it, and there's a reason why this must occur then.
Yeah.
And this makes great sense. What
yeah, this has
stated.
To happen. And, you know, America has done some pretty nasty things to other people, and
yes.
There's a lot of karma to be accounted for. So
and
we
that's
have
exactly
to stop
Saturn.
Pointing the finger and take a big look at how did we miss it? What were we doing? Were we off spending money and buying stuff instead of keeping track of what was happening in our country?
Very, very good observation. And
mm-hmm.
Saturn is the Lord of Karma. When I first started to read about that,
for sure.
I didn't quite understand what that meant. And kind of let me explain what that means to the public. Saturn's nature, among other things, is to make sure that we pay off every karmic imbalance that we have created for ourselves. Every thought, word, deed, action, experience has repercussions. And if we've done things in any way that's disharmonious to our soul or others or the world in general, we will have to come to some kind of balancing act or paying that off in some way, form, or shape. It also is the one who's there to see that we get repaid for the good karma that we've done. So it isn't always bad. It's the balancing out of that which we've created or the receiving of that which we are duly owed. And so Saturn's nature is to be like a stern schoolmarm, the old-fashioned schoolmarm, remember, with her hair in the bun, that would hit your knuckles hardly with a ruler if you didn't adhere to what you were supposed to be learning. That's what Saturn's nature is. It's a stern schoolmaster or schoolmarm who is there to not just teach us, be the teacher, but the balancer out of karma. So every time the United States has a Saturn return, it's in a karmic balancing off period, a karmic paying off period. Benefits from the good, but pay off the karma of the bad that we've done.
And also, after we do this, after we balance this out, then the work that we do inside of ourselves, that you're saying, that work that we do inside of ourselves, that allows us to let go of all of those old patterns of thought. You know, that I always think of that, they call them the Grim Reaper, you know, that the sickle. But what Saturn does is that it takes off everything that's old. It comes in the winter. You have to cut back all your plants so they can survive the winter. And that's what we have to do. We have to cut back all of these behaviors, you know, all of these negative karmas that we have allowed to happen, to therefore we can survive this transition into a beautiful new spring, which always comes.
Yes, absolutely. That is another way to look at it, too. Mm-hmm. The sickle of the Grim Reaper, who is also the Lord of Karma, the paring away and the cutting back. So when one kind of applies all of this and sees some of the changes going on in the outer planets and sees some of the things like a Jupiter-Saturn opposition in the sky now and a U.S.-Saturn return and all the other things we've mentioned, this is really a very, very powerful year and an exciting year because, now, again, I'm not a numerologist, but I did hear one on the radio recently on a nationwide radio show talk about this being a 4 year. And she said you add the 2 plus the 1 and the 1 of 2011 and you get a 4. And uh-huh. She said 4 years can be tough because they demand putting things down in a 4-square foundation. They demand you coming to terms with things. They demand that you, if something's not working, you have to realign it. If something's not existing, you have to either change into something else. But it's not always easy. In many Oriental countries, fours are considered very negative numbers. They're afraid of fours.
Mm-hmm.
Some Oriental people will not stay in a room, room four, or sit in a number four row on a plane because they see four as a hard, challenging vibrationary energy. But actually, it isn't that quite that intense. It really means just what we were talking about. Change, but at the same time, like the sickle of Saturn, cutting away that which is the old, but establishing a new foundation for something better and more defined. See?
Yes, and I think that's a good, because we're coming to the end of time, but just flew past. I'll have to come back and tell us more, Ronald. But yes, I think it is that there is this new foundation. I was thinking four as a foundation. You know, if you have a table, you want four legs. You know, those three-legged tables are pretty, but they fall over all the time. You know, so four is the foundation, and we have to, with the Saturn return for the United States, have to go all the way down to our foundation and clean it up and look, wait a second, we got off track. And
yes,
we're going
we
down
track.
To the foundation. And it's, of course, not just the United States by a long shot. I mean, the whole world, the whole Earth will have to be doing that. They just don't have the Saturn return that we're having. Probably some countries are, but anyhow, thank you so much.
Too.
Do you have any little closing words here? Because we're going to have to close in just a few minutes. But and you tied it together a bit. But do you have any more threads?
Well, one thing
to
is
it all together?
We talked about are worldwide. These are not just for the U.S. and this is not just for an individual. These are energies every physical embodied soul is experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an energy from the manifesting of planets and planetary patterns. And the more you study astrology, the more you begin to realize that it's a science not only of defining and understanding life and our purposes for coming into incarnation and the experiences we will have in each lifetime, but it's also the definer of cycles and timings of events in our life. So it's very valuable.
Yes.
Very valuable science.
Yes. And we're just coming into a wonderful time if you like change.
Exactly.
If you don't like change, well, better start liking it. So thank you so much. I'm so happy for you to come. And I'm sure we didn't get to all of your great information, so we'll just have to have you come back, and then you can do part two.
Well, I thank you very much, too. I can't even believe the program has already come to the end. It just
goes so fast. Well, time's not real anyhow. That's another illusion we'll get rid of. So, time and money, that's done. Okay, thanks again, Ron. I'll talk to you really soon.
It's been a pleasure and an honor.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye now.